Welcome to Made for Music, brought to you by Stitch Records. I am your host, Duncan Byerjean. This podcast seeks to depict a comprehensive picture of the music world, from the artistry to the business, so you can discover the resources available to you, and most importantly, the stories behind the people making things happen. If you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is, and sign up for the newsletter at madeformusicpodcast.com to be the first to hear about all the latest updates and insights into the ever-evolving music business. As I mentioned, this podcast is brought to you by Stitch Records. Many of you know Cross Stitch, aka Aaron Karstensen, the founder of Stitch Records. He's produced and mixed every song I've released as D.B. Stewart. He has a background in sound design for Berklee College of Music, and there is no one else I would trust more to deliver the best sounding mixes than him. The fastest way to get a hold of him is on Instagram under the handle at X, the letter, Stitch Music, all one word. But without further ado, we've got an amazing guest for you today, so hang on tight for the next episode of Made for Music. Welcome to Made for Music. If you have an entrepreneurial spirit and a love for music, you're going to love today's guest. She made her foray into music circa 2017, diving headfirst into the world of tour management, where she discovered a passion for the business side of the music world, and just 2 years later enrolled at Full Sail University to pursue a degree in music business. And right after graduation, you guessed it, the pandemic hit, bringing the touring world to a halt. That didn't stop her, though. Armed with an entrepreneurial spirit and, quote, a love for bossing people around, she immediately kickstarted an artist management venture for up-and-coming artists in need of managers committed to being real with their artists, while also doing social media management for Tim McGraw's company. She's also actively in the process of relaunching her solo artist management venture, spinning up a net new show promotion company. And that's not all. She also volunteers for Digilog as a Nashville coordinator, where she puts on events for the community, including monthly meetups where artists and music business folks can attend and not discuss music, but rather connect with one another on a personal level. As an aside, she's broken more bones than any person I've ever known, but don't let that fool you. She may be in dire need of extra calcium, but she's an absolute force of nature. So without further ado, please welcome the princess of perseverance, Becca Bishop.
Hello. What an intro.
There was a lot to get to. I'm so excited to have you here. But it was one of the things when I was going through everything, I was like, dang, someone's accomplished a lot here in past couple of years. So appreciate you.
I really love to stay busy. So
I feel that.
If you ever catch me having an off day, like, that's really rare.
Yeah, nice. I was going to say you were in the music world and then we're like, you know what? Let's take it up a notch. Let's go to school for it and all that. And we've got so much to dive into, but I always like to kind of start at the beginning. And I'd love to hear what role music played in your life growing up.
Yeah, great question. Music has always been like a center of my life. I remember even growing up, whenever I'd get in trouble, my parents would actually like ground me from listening to music, which was absolute torture. Like, that's like the worst thing you could do with somebody who like literally lives for music. So it's kind of funny now that like my whole life revolves around music, but music has just been a way that I've been able to communicate like how I feel and even understand how I feel with people. I was always the person that was making playlists for friends and always was the one that people passed the aux to, which is also such a cool role to have in a friend group. And then when I decided to go to college the first time around, I chickened out of doing anything in the music industry. I was like, oh, I'll just do event planning. Like, that's the same thing as tour planning and everything like that. And quickly, like after a semester, realized like that wasn't it for me. And when I decided music, I shocked the whole like world, it seemed like, but it didn't shock me because with my first degree, I skipped, this is so bad. If any of my teachers hear this, they're going to kill me, but I skipped my finals to go to a concert.
Wow.
Almost like literally like I got a zero on one of my finals just because I wanted to see John Bellion in concert, and I got front row, so it was totally worth it. But when I decided to like pursue music as an actual career, I was like, this is not a shocker for me, but I'm surprised it's a shocker for you guys. But Now I feel like everybody's quite accustomed to it.
At least it was worth it. That was going to be my first question when you're like, I skipped finals for a show. I'm like, oh, I really hope it was a good one. Because if it had been a disappointing show, that'd be a bummer.
That's true. It was, let's see, it was two back-to-back nights. The first night was X Ambassadors and Gavin DeGraw, which, wow, you know. And then the second night was Panic at the Disco and John Bellion. Like you, oh, wow. Like, yeah. So I skipped finals for a very good reason.
Yeah. Nice. Hey, well, you're here. You're in it. So that's what matters.
You made it.
That's four big names in a 48-hour span, though.
It was incredible. It was so incredible.
So were you Nashville-based at that time?
No, I was actually still home in Indiana, where I was born and raised in Lafayette. Big music kind of scene there, actually. In my hometown, two of the members from Guns N' Roses were born and raised there. There's a very popular Christian artist that was born and raised there. And then a rock artist named Shannon Hoon, who was born and raised there too. And I was like, growing up, I was hearing all of this stuff. And I was like, man, if like Axel and Jeremy and, you know, Shannon, they could come out of here. Like, I can too. And but do it on a different way. Like, I want to do it on the business side, not necessarily the creative aspect of creating music. So it's kind of funny because, I mean, there's not much to do in Indiana if you've ever been. So going to concerts or going to school were probably my two only options for that day.
Right. Nice. That's also that there's that through line. I read all the, well, I shouldn't say all. I read Slash and Duff McKagan's bios. And it was always so fascinating that they really talked about how that Indiana spirit kind of carried through with Axl. How did the local or regional community impact your experience with music?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very blessed to not have to be a small town girl from Indiana. I grew up in a college town, Purdue University being like 2 minutes from my house, which was amazing. So there was a huge underground rock scene there that I got to like fall in love with. Obviously the country scene's really great there, and Indianapolis is only 45 minutes away. So usually big touring acts got to hit that city. So I was super blessed to be able to say, like, if I wanted to see somebody, I could. Or Chicago was like 3 hours away too. So I'd like to say it's like the Midwest that kind of developed me, not just my hometown, but it was really wonderful because even the community was so music driven. I mean, there's so many festivals that they try to put on and have local acts play. And even like growing up, I was singing in church too. So there was a huge, like, massive impact of music within my community. So I was really grateful for that. But it was also time to go. When I left, I was like, okay, sayonara.
Yeah, you're like, it's given me everything I need.
Yes.
That's very cool. So what I guess made you, it seems like a silly question to ask, but I'm always just curious the motivation. Did you know when you were leaving, like, okay, Nashville is like a spot I want to be? Or what did that transition look like?
Totally. Yeah. My grandma lived in Murfreesboro for a little while. Actually, both my grandparents did. And I got to really fall in love with Tennessee at a young age because we'd come visit all the time. And I remember in high school, I was kind of bratty when I would tell people, like, I'm graduating high school and immediately moving to Nashville. Like, this is not the place for me. And I didn't go right after high school. It took me a couple years, but I finally made it. But I always knew Nashville was my place. And like, there's so many people here that are kind of using Nashville as like a funnel to get to New York or even LA. And it's funny because like, I'm like, no, like, this is me. Like, I'm exactly where I want to be. And it's really cool because Nashville's developing in different ways and allowing and allotting for different genres to actually have a chance outside of country music. Love country music, but the rock scene's blowing up here. The pop scene's blowing up here. The ska scene is blowing up here. I was like, what is happening?
I would
like everything. Yeah, there's everything here. R&B, rap, like it's just really beautiful. Like Music City is kind of becoming Music City.
It was pre-pandemic the last time I was there, but that was actually what surprised me, as I went with folks that were very much country, diehard country folks. And everywhere we're going was, more rock oriented. And then we even went to shows like Basement East and stuff like that. Where it was a pop show, which we were not expecting. We were like, what's going to be country the whole time we're here? So that's really cool. It's continued to diversify over the years. What's your like local spots you go to?
So I'm like a weird person. I actually go to writer's rounds and bring my laptop to work. I love going to Live Oak. It's over there on De Montbrien in Midtown. That's where a lot of like the local, in my opinion, the best local country artists go to play. And then I get to hear their originals. And I've actually picked up two clients that way just because I was like, I
Nice.
love you and your music. So let's do something together. But outside of that, I just go for fun too. Love Basement and Basement East. Both of them are fantastic. Obviously, love the Ryman. I mean, it's an incredible experience to see a show there. And honestly, there's so many like pop-up venues. Like my new favorite, I would say one that just popped up recently is called the Electric Jane. The owner is like incredible. He's so kind and so genius, in my opinion. And the sound system and lighting system is incredible there. It's also a restaurant. So it's like everything you could think of. And the green room's a purple room because the owner was friends with Prince. So I was like, this is
Wow.
cool. So it's just like a really neat spot. It's really blowing up. And so I just love that place. It's really cool. So those are probably like my favorite venues for now. But like it changes all the time. Like I will go to a venue nonstop just because I love the venue. And then I'll be like, okay, I've burnt myself out. Time to go to the next one.
That's so cool. That's the one thing I love, just having only been there for I guess a very brief amount of time, but was just that it's everywhere though. The live music, just everywhere you go, is like just so baked into it.
Yeah.
Because I feel like in Seattle, for example, it's like a lot. There's a lot of amazing music and venues, but it's all ticketed. Like you're not just going to be able to go walk in somewhere and really discover
Yeah.
someone in that way. So you talking about, going into Live Oak and just sitting down and working, that's super cool to hear. Is like there's just areas you can go discover folks.
Yeah, I like seriously the best play Live Oak. It's insane. I mean, Whiskey Jam too, but that's like when you play Whiskey Jam, you know you're doing something, really effective in the music industry. But sometimes Live Oak, it's like, hey, this is my first writer's round, and you're like, oh, I'm gonna catch on to you right now, Follow, we're besties. Let's do something cool together.
Nice. That's awesome. So I'm curious how the artist management stuff came to fruition. Well, because I know you go to school for music business. When you were in the program, did you think to yourself like, oh, management's the route I want to go? Or were you still kind of thinking I'm going to go back into the live music space?
Totally. My intention was when I started school, I wanted to go back out on the road. Essentially, when I was on the road, assistant TMing, I was like so infatuated with it. I love travel. I love it. I love not sleeping, longer than 2 hours a night. Like that was just everything. And I quickly learned during the pandemic that I wasn't gonna get back out on the road. And at least not yet. And so in my naive brain, I was like, oh, tour management and artist management are like the same thing. Like one's a tour, one's a person. Like it's fine. We'll figure it out. And then very quickly learned that it's not the same thing. But I also very quickly learned that I absolutely love managing. And my first client was a Latin Grammy nominated artist named Fito Espinola, and he's an incredible guitarist, an incredible songwriter, incredible person too. And it was a great way to start. And honestly, like I feel like I'm bragging a little bit, but like it was a
Do
really
it. That's what we're here for.
start. Yeah, thank you. And not a lot of people can say that too. And so being able to work with him and kind of develop him for a little while was just kind of icing on the cake and help kind of reassure myself because I'm very hard on myself that I could do this and that I wanted to do it. And then eventually that spurred out for me being able to work with so many other different artists of every genre you could think of underneath the sun. So I kind of fell into artist management and I've met so many managers now being in the industry for a little while. And that's kind of how they do it too. Like, it's not like something that you're like, I'm gonna be a manager. Like, it's just like if you have the key skills, you just fall into it on accident and then you just keep rolling with it.
That's so cool because, and one thing I'm curious about is you mentioned you kind of had those intangibles that you needed to bring to the table. And when you kickstarted the initial artist management venture, it was identifying there was a need for managers to be real with their artists. I'm curious if you are willing to dive into that a little bit more, I guess, like where
Yeah,
that need came from.
absolutely. While I was in school, I had the great honor to have so many internships. And I went to Full Sail, and it's a very quick program. It's not like a traditional school. You have like a year and a half to get your bachelor's degree. You don't get a summer break. You don't get really a winter break. Like it's just boom, 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 boom. And so with that, they kind of advise you not to have an internship. But me being me, I was like, great, I'll have many. Like that's just
Nice.
who I am. It's really annoying. Sometimes I put too much on my plate, but it's a good thing.
I feel that.
So it's kind of funny that one of the internships that I'm most proud of taught me the lesson that I needed to be a manager that actually stood up for the artist. Just because I'm really pro, like talking about mental health and making sure like we're good as people and then we can do our jobs. And obviously, like in the music industry, especially in management, like you become their best friend or their mom or their dad or their hairstylist or, you know, all of these roles you kind of fill in as a manager. And so with that internship, I was able to kind of see even some of the artists struggling with their mental health and their managers kind of like pushing it away because they're like, we've got to stay on track. We've got to stay on track. And I think there's a method to their madness, of course, but there's also a piece of humanity that was missed. So I just felt that I needed to be there for that. And that was just a really big proponent for why I wanted to start managing artists in the first place. And even with all my clients, no matter if it's like a management kind of thing or social media, or even just like as a friend, let me give you some advice. I always like to make sure they're good as a person. And like, if they need a break, like, let's take a break. You know, we can release a song and then promote it 2 weeks later. If, you know, the week after you release a song, something really crazy happens. I'm a big proponent on like music is going to be heard when it's supposed to be heard, which I know is like very anti everything in the music industry right now. But I'll listen to my Spotify, you know, whatever playlist. And when it's done, it'll be like, oh, here's a song recommendation. And I'll be like, wow, this song's really great. And I'll like look at it and I'm like, wait, this song dropped in like 1972. Like, why have I never heard this song before? Or, oh, wow, this is an amazing song. I've never heard it. Oh, it literally just released from an artist I literally don't know. Like, so I feel like, you know, if I'm supposed to hear the song, if somebody's supposed to hear a song, they're going to at some point. And my role is to kind of fill in those gaps to help people get to hear those songs. But I also don't feel as much pressure as maybe some other people do, and maybe the same role that I'm in, to kind of just like shove it down people's throats. Because I, again, just think music will be heard when it's supposed to be heard.
I love that quote so much. It makes me think of the real world application of that is like when Lizzo broke and how it was 2 years after the fact. She was almost onto the next record and it was just a wonderful placement and a clip that exploded.
That's literally the example that I use all the time.
Oh, no way. That's awesome.
Yeah, because I think it's so important to remember. I mean, she almost gave up as an artist after that Truth Hurts didn't hit. And she was like, this one's gonna hit. And then it didn't. And then it did 2 years later. And then she's like, oh, wait, let me just do this again. But I love to use that as an example because it's so true. I mean, like, even like Fleetwood Mac, Dreams blew up. I mean, how many years later? You know, because the guy on the skateboard with his Kool-Aid or whatever it was, like anything can chart. Like, I mean, I know we just had 4th of July, but like Party in the USA is charting again because, you know, anything can chart. It doesn't matter if it was released yesterday or, you know, 50 years ago.
Yeah, Mariah Carey is on quite the run every December.
Every December. I hope someday somebody can be like, hey, here's a better single. Like, sorry, Mariah, but like I'm tired of that song at Christmas.
It's gonna be tough, an original that can do what that's done.
The day after Thanksgiving, I'm like, okay, here we
Brace
go.
yourselves, incoming. No, I love that, cause, and that's so important too, because I think everything is so time of the essence, especially with the nature of the now, and not just in music, but social media and just business in general is,
Yeah.
always be selling, always be closing. Everything's got to be everywhere all at once. But to your point, if you're not equipped or at the time, whether it's, you got to take a mental health break, whatever, it's like you can't ride the wave if you're not in the right headspace.
Exactly. And people can tell when you don't want to use your content or create content. People can tell when you didn't want to create that video. So why not wait till you actually want to create the video? So this is like a big thing for me.
I dig that. And to your point, not a lot of management is taking that lens. How do you feel the last couple of years have informed or repositioned how you approach management or just reinforced it?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, I think first off, I've had to fall in love with music in a different way. Because what I always say is like when, I hate saying this, but when normal people get off work, they typically go listen to music or watch a movie or watch a TV show. But when that's your job, you don't want to do that after work. So I've had to fall back in love with music more times than I'd probably like to admit. And especially more so in the last couple of years, really diving in as a manager, Because when you have such a huge catalog of unreleased music in your head, you kind of start comparing and you're like, oh, we should have dropped this when this happened. And then, you know, it gets kind of crazy, at least up here. And so I've had to kind of shift and make sure that one, like my mental health is good. And that is me taking a little spoonful of my own medicine, because I always project that on other people, but don't really listen to myself sometimes. All the time, not sometimes. So with that, the Digilog has just been a great place to kind of grow the community in Nashville and just really help so many other people get a chance in music. I've seen so many people that normally wouldn't have a chance in music get a chance, which is beautiful. Whether that's like playlisting or just even the opportunity to speak to somebody who works at a label, or even just play their music in front of a different crowd instead of just their friends, you know, because there's so many artists in the world, and not all of them, unfortunately, and also maybe fortunately, get to hit a market. Some don't even have the resources. So it's really cool that the Digilog has kind of created a space that, like, in my opinion, everybody has a chance. And then with that, being like a community curator, I get to kind of help develop these things for the artists and also the business side. The no business days are kind of really important, in my opinion, for us business folk. Because artists, they, in my opinion, they typically don't have an issue with talking about themselves and like their music all the time, which is great. That's their job. But on the business side, I feel like sometimes we can kind of lose track of everything and also lose the sight of what business really is, which is developing relationships. So yeah, I guess it's kind of a little long-winded answer, but it's been a really cool ride, but it's also been really heavy, and therapy is great.
I'm a big proponent. I think everyone, artists, everyone period benefits from it.
Yeah, like, for sure.
We've had that big health kick, you know, where it's like, we take care of our physical health. Like, why are we not, you know, treating the mentals in the same way?
Yes.
Up on it.
Literally.
That's so cool. I mean, I think selfishly, I was just hearing a lot of stuff that I like have like that are core tenets of mine. So that was kind of me like nodding along here. But
I love that.
What I'm hearing, I guess I should say, and I should open it back up to you, is I'm hearing a very holistic approach to the artistry, not just, you know, record, promote, etc. It's really like with the way you're approaching things, it's like, let's take a very holistic angle as a partnership between yourself and your artists on how you grow this thing together. Am I representing that correctly?
Yeah, I like to say it in this way, and it's not to diss anybody who's doing it opposite from what I do, but I really believe in my artist's music, and I really believe in my artists as human beings. And I feel like just sticking to release schedule kind of discredits them and their work. So like, I mean, some of my artists, I'm like, hey, like, for some reason Post Malone's blowing up again because he's about to, you know, drop an album. And also I'm pretty 99% sure he's going to be featured on Noah Kahan's new release of one of his songs this week. So like, maybe we should push this song because it has a little bit more of a posty vibe and it's already out. So like, why not, you know?
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of value in, you know, scrolling through somebody's Instagram feed and seeing her release, you know, like, oh, okay, this is their single. This is the second single. Oh, here's the album. You know, there's a lot of value in that because for organization purposes and aesthetic as well. But just from like a, I guess, person to person, you know, way, I guess it's kind of discrediting their work a little bit. And I think music is forever. If they're creating music, it should be timeless in the first place. Unless it's like, let me take a selfie. That song that blew up in like, what, 2015? That one was just
song of the moment. Yeah.
Yeah, that one doesn't count. She doesn't count. She doesn't count. But like the rest of these, I mean, like most of songs can be related to some sort of main feeling, which it's either sadness or happiness, somewhere along those, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody has felt one of those two feelings. And so, I think it's really cool if an artist can just be able to push their music whenever they feel like it. So that's the way I like to do it. Obviously we still stick with like a release schedule when something's about to release. Cause I have a client that like, he's releasing music every 2 weeks. So like,
dang,
you betcha. Like there's not room for like much like overlap of going back to a song, but
right,
we do when we can. But it's really cool. I think there's so much value in being able to kind of go back to songs when it feels right. Like, and also like, I'm a big person and proponent for like, why not? Like, if there's no rules in music, you know,
right,
like you may as well. You may as well.
That's so fascinating. So obviously we met through Caitlin, and one thing she was talking about was working with Tom Higgins, and that was his whole thing. He's like, hey, no rules. Like if we own the masters, if we own the music itself, why not? We can do whatever we set our mind to.
Right. And who knows where that will lead you. Like, that's the thing. Like, I remember growing up and watching like the Grammys and everything like that. And when artists and individuals would like win, they would be like, I worked so hard for this and y'all don't understand. And I would literally roll my eyes. I'm like, yeah. Okay, because I know how labels work. I know how labels worked. But then getting in the scene and like seeing like the amount of work and integrity that takes with it, it is a lot of work, you know, even if they do have a label backed up behind them. Like it's a ton of work. And to discredit that work, like even with like Lizzo, like she won a Grammy for a song that dropped 2.5 years prior. Like,
right.
I remember when they were like, can this even win? Can this even be nominated? Because like, right, does it fall through? So they re-released it as a single so they could. Like, brilliant, you know?
Right.
So, you know, there's no rules really. Like, unless the Grammys tell you you can't do something, but then you just re-release a single. So then,
yeah. It's like, oh, here we are. I love what you're saying, how it's just meant to be heard, or it's going to get heard when it's meant to. Because that's so, and even so many artists, especially from the Nashville scene, I feel like even seeing how Jelly Roll is popping off sort of thing. And it's stuff like that where, you know, I don't mean to misrepresent, but I believe the gentleman's like his like late 30s kind of thing. He was talking about, he did it for 10, 15 years, like same kind of thing where he's like, I don't know where I'm supposed to go. I don't know if there's a place for me. And it's now he's on top of the world kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so cool. Cause I think, I mean, I have so many theories about the music industry and I won't dive into too much of that, but you know, I think that there is an opportunity for everybody as long as the music is there. I think it's not necessarily just money. And the music has to be good. There's so many artists that'll make a come up and then people realize what they're listening to is not great. I don't want to say garbage because I don't like to call music garbage, but maybe not great. And there's no connection to the fans. And that artist will phase out really quickly. But the artists that have a story and even dedicate their time or even just take 30 seconds on their tour each show and just thank their fans, like that goes so much further and there's a place for that. And I think that's so cool. And artists even like Jelly Roll, which I'm a huge Jelly Roll fan. If I ever get to work with him, I think that'll be it for me. I'm like, I'm good. Everything's nice. Fine. I think it's cool when they're able to kind of have a chance because sometimes it's fun to beat the odds.
Totally.
And even if it is a marketing ploy, I mean, who knows what the labels are thinking and trying to do, but it's really cool that somebody who never thought that they would have a shot has a shot and they're doing so well because the music is great and the story's great, but the music is great. It's wonderful.
And it's like you said too, people will be able to tell if something's not fully there. So yeah, even if the marketing message is backing something up, I'm a big believer that the best marketing is just what's real. So sure, maybe a bunch of extra money got put behind said message to promote it, but it's like people are going to suss out what's not there. So if so it's really cool. And so, hey, putting the vibes out there for y'all to work together. But
Jelly Roll, if you hear this.
Yeah. You're really bringing things kind of full circle here. So you started off your initial degree kind of in the event planning space. You go into music, and now not only do you have an artist management venture, you're leading up to an event promotion or show promotion venture. So even then, you're talking about how at first it wasn't music, but now those worlds really are colliding. I guess, do you want to dive into that? I'm really curious to hear, because obviously artist management is a lot of time and effort.
Yeah.
Where you decided to kind of pull in this second venture and what inspired that?
Absolutely. Live music is everything to me. I remember when I was really struggling with my mental health growing up, I would use shows as like a way to keep going. So I went to a lot of concerts.
That's the way to go.
It was just, I mean, I still do. I love concerts and I think there's so much value in an escapism kind of, you know, method that can happen in, you know, a concert. And there's so much magic that can happen there too, even for somebody that knows exactly what the set list is going to be and when the lights are going to change and when the artist is going to change their outfit. Like, there's still so much magic there. I just love it. So yeah, we're launching a show promotion company here in Nashville, and the intention is to bring music back to music, which is kind of silly and basically the opposite of what my other job is, which is heavily marketing side of things. Because I actually had the idea about a year and a half ago what I wanted to do with this new venture, Phantom Presents, and then solidified that what I was doing in my head was what I wanted to do in real life after seeing Diplo play in Nashville. And the entire venture with Phantom is, I don't necessarily care about your numbers on social media or streaming. As long as you can play a great show and bring people out, I'm cool with that. And I also don't care if you're one genre and the person before you after you is a different genre. Like, if the vibes are right, if it seems right, we're going to do it, because why not? And Diplo helped kind of fit that in for me because he had a country opener, which, I mean, he was touring with his country EDM album, or EDM, I guess is what it's called now.
EDM, that term. That's awesome.
Somebody just told me that the other day, and I was like, dang it, that's really clever, but yeah. I really hate it. So he was touring with his EDM album, had a country opener who's featured on that album, but it was brilliant. And I was like, yeah, this is right, because you had people who were very visibly there for the EDM aspect, and then you had people who were very visibly there for the country aspect, and then there was me wearing like Doc Martens and a cowgirl hat. It didn't make sense, but it made sense, you know?
That sounds like that should be his next album.
EDM. I just like, it just solidified everything. Like, this is what I want to do, because it worked. It worked once, and that was enough for me to be like, all right, let's pull the plug. So Phantom Presents is the new venture. I'm very excited. I get to bring two people on that I've got to work with for like last year and a half, 2 years, to this new venture. And I'm really excited. We're going to take over Nashville and do some really cool things with some writers rounds. There's so many artists that have already said yes to opportunities that, you know, I just blurted out and put out there, and people are like, that's genius, let's do it. And I think that's really cool. And also, I'm terrified. So even though I seem really excited and enthusiastic, I'm also internally freaking out, because, you know, new things are hard and scary, but they're also fun.
Totally. And that's where the magic is, though. Something new.
Yeah.
Sounds like something people are really going to latch on to. So that's very exciting.
Thank you. I'm really excited. I have to plug the reasoning behind the name as well, because it kind of goes to with the magic of everything. So Phantom is the definition that I found that I thought was beautiful, was something elusive or visionary until it comes into fruition, which is a concert.
Wow. Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
That is very cool. That gives a whole new meaning, like Phantom power too. Like, I've got Phantom power running on these mics. I had no idea. Now, wow. That is awesome.
I loved it. Yeah. So I was like, that's it. I take forever coming up with names. So when that one hit, I was like, oh, that's it. That's the one.
Nice. So year and a half then in development.
Yeah. Correct. I was in the process. I had a previous company that has since closed, and we, meaning me and some of my like peers, who have nothing to do business-wise with the company, we're just talking about, you know, why the heck am I not doing anything in live music? Because that's just who I am and what I do. And, you know, my artists were doing shows, but like, it wasn't enough for me. And so I was like, how cool would it be, you know, after talking to some of my friends, it's like, how could it be in like 10, 15 years, have like a birthday bash festival where it's just all my favorite artists playing for my birthday, but then people pay to come see it because they're really good artists. And they're like, yeah, you should do that. I'm like, oh, maybe I should do that. So like, all of this is leading up to like five other things that I have in my head, but Phantom is my new baby, and I'm really excited for her.
That's so cool. And all building blocks, you know, you keep building up the empire, if you will.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. People love a bit of everything. And it's interesting because beforehand you'd mentioned, your background, there was kind of an amalgamation of music as well. You mentioned being your folks being into country music, but also like a metalhead and stuff like that. So did that play at all into your kind of eclectic music taste?
100%. Oh my gosh. I like to tell people my favorite genre of music is good music because I just can't pick one. Mm-hmm. So like if I have aux, just know that it's going to be like, you know, reggae music followed by like heavy metal followed by like Willie Nelson. Like, it's just like, there's no in between for me. It's just, if it's a good song, it's a good song. I'm going to play it. I'm going to listen to it. But yeah, my dad raised me on rock. My mom raised me on a lot of country and like top 40. So I had like a very eclectic kind of growing up. And then I was lucky enough to grow up where top 40 also included like hip hop and heavy metal as well. So like literally everything is in there. And so like, you know, some of my favorite artists growing up were like Aerosmith and like Kelly Clarkson and then Lil Wayne, which are like boom, boom, and boom. Like, they're just not, how does that make sense? It just made sense to me.
Yeah, I love that. That's kind of how I was as well. I was probably a little more angstier about it and wasn't admittedly as open to all of the genres, but very cool that you've been able to bring that full circle.
I love getting to do things the way I like to do them, which sounds kind of, if you know me, it makes sense. Yeah, having such a diverse taste in music and getting to kind of bring that into a career is like a dream come true. I just turned 25, so I feel like the world is my oyster. I can do whatever I want. Yeah. So I feel like I'll probably listen to this, you know, 5 years down the road, be like, why did you say that? You know, but I just feel so ready to take on whatever music has and, you know, whatever direction too. I think that's the cool thing is like, I mean, even in this conversation, the music industry has changed probably like 5 times and we'll probably only hear about maybe 1 or 2. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really cool. Like in this conversation, somebody most likely just got discovered and somebody probably is going to get signed in the morning. So, you know, it's really cool. You know, and I just love that aspect to think about, like, even like now, like I heard like a statistic, I think last year at the Music Business Association conference, and they said like every 45 seconds, somebody is writing their hit single, which is really cool because you think about it, there's like a lot of artists out there and a lot of artists have multiple hits too. So like that statistic really does make sense to me. That's really fun, you know, that's really cool. And like how awesome for us business folk to know that, you know, every day, even if it's just one song a day, that there's an opportunity for us to tackle that in any way that we see fit with our strengths that we were given, you know? So I love it. And I think it's really amazing that music has also shifted. At least the music fan has shifted. I was talking to my dad recently and he was like, you know, like when I was growing up, like you were one genre, you know, only like fan. Right. That was it. You weren't allowed to like hop in and, you know, go test the waters everywhere. And so getting to grow up when I did, I think it's really beautiful that so many genres and even artists from outside of the United States had an opportunity to like blow up here or even vice versa. Like artists from the United States blowing up outside of the United States and getting to hear about that from peers, you know, overseas. So, you know, I think the music industry is shifting in so many beautiful ways, but also like in ways that we can't even comprehend yet. So we just have to keep an open mind to everything.
It's becoming an increasingly global community, but then somehow feeling even smaller, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. The music industry is so small too. So if you're listening to this and you're like, gosh, I don't know if I can do it. Yes, you can. You will literally run into your coworkers at, you know, your local grocery store and be like, dang it, I literally just saw you. Like the music industry is so small. And I promise you, especially if you're in Nashville, like, you meet somebody and then you start running into them everywhere. It's just the craziest and most awkward thing too. So you're like, man, I was just trying to get a sandwich. Like,
right, yeah, that's why you need those break days.
Yeah, literally.
Oh Oh, that's awesome. I'd like to try and do like a get stump section just based on kind of what we've like a rapid fire, just throw some stuff at you and figure out. So kind of hearkening back to the very beginning of the interview, you're skipping school for these folks. John Belly on our Panic at the Disco.
John, all the way. I literally will never say anything bad about him.
Nice.
He is the most incredible human being. I've never met him, but I will. And he's dropping a song tomorrow, I think, with John Batiste. And like you know, like this is incredible. I'm a huge fan of John, but like also outside of that, like just as a business person, I think he's just a brilliant person. So always and forever, John Bellion.
His interview on And the Writer Is blew my mind with his approach to his career.
Like it just doesn't make sense, but it does, you know, right. Like it's
right. Yeah. Basement or Basement East?
Basement East.
Nice. Electric Chain or Live Oak?
I'm a big Electric Chain girl. I think I'll always swear by that venue.
Right on. You owned it. There was no stumping yet. But I always like to kind of bring things full circle and look at like the big picture. So I guess stepping back, why do you work in music?
This is probably a silly answer, but I tried to do other things and it just didn't work. Music just kept coming back. I worked in real estate for a couple of years. I worked in social media outside of the music industry for a little bit while I was doing real estate. And during that whole time, I mean, every industry that I touched in, whether it was real estate or the food industry or the clothing industry, like music just kept coming back and I would only talk about music and people would know me as the music girl and it just always was there. And so when I finally just caved in and was like, you know what, we're going to do it. And if that means we don't have a savings account for a couple of years, that's okay. You know, we get to do what we love every single day. And I think that's the most beautiful thing. And I honestly cannot see myself doing anything else. I think music is just where it's at.
I love that. And then conversely, what do you hope people get out of working with you in the music space?
Yeah, I think one of the big things that I like to push as like a business individual is that they can feel safe and heard. But also, I hope that we accomplish all their goals together. I have goals for all of my artists, but I also know that they have goals for themselves. So when we can conjoin those and make those happen, I think that's the most beautiful thing. And I maybe a third thing is a friend, even. I know you're not supposed to be friends with your coworkers or your boss, because technically the artists that I work with are my boss.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't look at myself as the boss and then my artists are below me. Quite frankly, I see us as equals, but at the end of the day, like I do see my artists as my boss. And so my job is to fill in the gaps and to also make those things happen. And then use my best judgment and my educated guesses to help make those things happen. But at the end of the day, it's not me, you know, I'm not the one on the cover of the song. I'm also not the one creating the content necessarily. I'm behind the camera. I'm just not in front of it.
Right.
So yeah, I hope through those things, like, while we grow together, like we can develop a really strong friendship too, that even if we stop working together, we can still have. Because I think that's the whole part of music, is it's supposed to join people together.
Rewinding 2017, you run into yourself. What do you tell that younger self as you're about to make your foray into the space?
Oh, wow. Don't let old white men walk all over you, because you do know what you're talking about. Don't start companies with your friends. Bad idea. And also create a playlist of your favorite songs that you can go back to when you start to fall out of love with music.
All very sage advice. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. Yeah. It was so awesome to get to spend the time, and I can't wait for folks to hear this and to watch all these ventures in action.
Thank you. And likewise, this was so much fun.
Oh, I'm so glad. I was glad I could help you on your evening lunch break.
Yes. This was a great evening lunch break.
Oh, it makes me so happy to hear.
And
cheers. shouts out to Becca for being on Made for Music. Phantom Presents has since gone live, spelled F-A-N-T-O-M. Be sure to follow Phantom Presents on Instagram and all those other social media sites. Of course, be sure to follow Becca as well, at Becca, B-E-K-A, Bishop, B-I-C-H-O-P, underscore, on IG, Threads, and all other social sites. And if you dig what you hear on the podcast, brought to you by Stitch Records, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. Truly appreciate that extra effort, and I will see you next time.